1401.
I have a question on this one. What if I go meet you at the office?
Yeah, I don't see that one says denied.
Does it say denied?
Okay.
Got it, thank you. Just double checking. What do I put there?
Well, we, I'm going, because in case it changed or something.
But that one needs to be amended.
You're not acting, so you can keep signing. I'm gonna go ahead and roll if that's okay.
Yep, please.
All right, so our next project to hear is.
That one needs to be amended.
Returning to us from the supervisors, agenda item two, the Kidder Creek Orchard Camp Zone Change Z1401 and Use Permit UP1115, along with the MMRP mitigation measures. And we have a staff report to enlighten us as to why the Board of Supervisors sent this back to us for re-review. Haley, I'm assuming you're gonna be point on this.
Correct, and I also created a brief presentation for you all.
Floor is yours.
Thank you. Haley Lang, Planning Director. So the Kidder Creek Orchard Camp project was brought forth back to you all.
Hold on just a second.
Okay.
Let me do it right. Do a screen share. There you go.
Next slide. Next slide.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. So at the December Board of Supervisors meeting, the board unanimously voted to send the project back to the Planning Commission for further deliberation. The board had some areas of concerns where they wanted further clarification on the record before they heard and discussed the project. Next slide. The areas of concern include fire hazards, the pond slash, you know, water issues, zoning, biological resources, and also the mitigation monitoring and reporting program document. Fire hazards, so there are a number of concerns that the board communicated. And then in this presentation, I have the planning staff response. Again, none of this is new information. This is just further clarifying information that's already in the record, that's, you know, data that's already in the EIR and technical studies. So first concern was that, you know, Patterson Creek and the proposed escape routes circle back to the direction of Cheeseville. Why are there not, why is there not an alternative route to the north? So the planning response is that, you know, Kidder Creek will utilize any and all evacuation routes dependent upon the emergency and the direction, including travel of staff and guests are able to go, including an alternative route to the north. Another concern was that an analysis of fire behavior is warranted and was not yet conducted. As you all reviewed, I believe, in the November Planning Commission meeting, Kidder Creek had already completed fire behavior analyses. And additionally, Brian Shinoni of OES has completed additional fire behavior analyses. And he will tack on to the secondary half of this presentation to show you all the additional information and analysis that was conducted by him and his team. Third concern was that any road should be, any road to be constructed in the excessive slope areas be constructed to protect against erosion. We are confirming that any road that will be constructed will protect against erosion. The fourth concern, the ability of the camp to utilize project activity levels. The camp will utilize PALs, and PALs are a decision-making tool designed to help fire and timber resource managers establish a level of industrial precaution for the following day, such as precautionary evacuations. And the last concern, 4290 standards, speaking to signage for evacuations, storage water requirements, and green belt requirements. Does the camp currently meet that? Is there anything additional that they need to do? So So Kidder Creek currently meets all requirements of 4290 and will make any additional improvements if required by CAL FIRE or the county. I will also note, I believe there's a provision in 4290 that allows for Brian Cinnone as the local fire warden to impose any additional requirements or standards should he feel that's warranted. Next slide.
Could I ask a question? Were these concerns by the Board of Supervisors, or were they generated from the public hearing?
The Board of Supervisors.
And those were answered, weren't they?
Not
at the meeting? At the meeting, weren't those answered?
Like at the board level meeting or the November, they were not answered at the board level meeting. Because they wanted further information in the record prior to even you know, having the discussion.
All right.
Many of these came up because of the MMRP and the way that it was worded.
Mm-hmm.
Which, once again, contractors shall never be hired by the county again. Please continue.
Sure. So the pond, concern number one, review whether the proposed pond requires downhill channeling from Barker Ditch and thus is not only a pass-through but a diversion. So the planning response to that is the decision as to whether the channeling from Barker Ditch to the proposed pond should be classified as a diversion is a legal determination for the California State Water Board. Through it, arguably, appears that the secondary channel should be classified as a diversion under Water Code Section 5100C.
Okay, question on that one.
Mm-hmm.
I know enough to be real dangerous on this. A diversion under California water law is within a tributary, stream, or river. My understanding on all the maps we've seen from KCOC, the POD is at Kidder Creek, the Creek Creek.
Mm-hmm.
This is off of a ditch. Therefore, it is not a diversion. It is a noted point of use, to be clear.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Thank you. Second concern, the board wanted, review the evaporation study by Chris Cummings related to the methodology used. They basically just wanted the methodology to be further discussed at this meeting. And our response is that Chris Cummings, he is here, and he will provide additional clarity on the study. Concern three, whether or not the leaky ditch regulation would result in curtailment of Barker Ditch in the future. Given these considerations, would the project have a reduced number of participants at any given time if there is no pond? So the response to that is the Deputy Director for the Division of Water Rights may now issue a curtailment order when flows of certain rivers, including the Scott River, drop below minimums unless diversions from the river are curtailed.
Okay, clarification on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm directing this question to you because we've not entered public comment yet.
Mm-hmm.
Based upon the information in the original project that we saw,
mm-hmm.
the pond is permitted storage, short-term storage, correct?
Correct.
Therefore, the curtailment does not apply to it. Because within the regulation under the existing curtailments for the Scott River Basin cannot be curtailed for storage purposes. For clarification.
Correct.
Continue.
Thank you. And the last concern, is there a need to condition that wells are for domestic use only? So the response is that any well permit applications must make the selection of use for the well in which they're applying for. So if Kidder Creek applies and receives a permit for the domestic designation, the use of the groundwater is by virtue of the permit issuance for designated for domestic uses.
Okay, so now question here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anything in the original project proposal for the sinking of any new wells. Was I mistaken? Is there a proposal to sink new wells? You're nodding your heads yes.
Yes, within a proposal there was a need to obtain a 17 gallon minute, if I believe correctly, which would require one additional well
17?
17 gallons per minute.
Okay. Good.
Is that probable offer?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You'd hit it with a shovel. So on this, I'm trying to walk a fine line because we haven't entered public comment, but it's directly related to this, and it's our staff report. Has staff, you directly, Haley or you, Mr. Dean, had communication with Matt Parker with the questions that were brought up as potential connectivity? And I'm not using the word connectivity as it pertains to groundwater with surface water. I'm talking connection of how Sigma applies and what the county, particularly the Scott Riverside, the plan that they developed, which is going to get rejected by the state and it's going to come back again. Have you talked to him about how that plan does and does not interact with the uplands? Has that conversation been had yet?
We have discussed generalities of that primarily through our permit issuance process. So, we have been working at the board level with Matt Parker and council to develop specific guidelines on checkpoints, basically, to address the public trust doctrine, to address compatibility with the GSP, and then also currently now with the governor's order, prior to the issuance of any well permit anywhere in the county. So,
okay. Question answered.
Next slide. Zoning, so there was a concern of zoning. Is the density of the recreation taking place at the camp and whether that level of recreation should be considered commercial? So within our county code, section 10-16.1502 essentially allows for recreational uses in all of our zoning districts under our general provisions permit article 15. Commercial recreation facility, it's identified as a recreation facility operated as a business that's open to the public. That is defined in our code, but that's not defined anywhere else in the code, so it's literally just added as a definition, which doesn't necessarily meet the intent of Kidder Creek, but we do have an additional provision, recreation facility private, as a recreation facility operated by a nonprofit organization and open only to the bona fide members and such and guests of such nonprofit organizations. Staff feels that there is enough within that definition to meet the intent of the Kidder Creek project. So we do not feel that there is a conflict within our county code or zoning designations.
Okay, I'm gonna put you on the hot seat then, because this is staff report.
Yep.
Convince me. What are your findings for making that determination?
Well, because it is a camp where you pay to attend to go to the camp. It's not open to the public. It's not, for example,
and this right here, this is what I need you / council to convince me on. Mm-hmm. Because I read the county code, and granted, actually, I guess Mount Shasta Ski Park could be compared. Granted, they're not a nonprofit. They're a for-profit business.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with a nonprofit.
Right.
In both instances, you can have an individual buying an annual pass to Mount Shasta Ski Park, which, under legal definition of our code, they are a member. What makes that different than this?
Well, let me speak to it. And just by way of background, originally when the CIR was done, actually when the mitigated negative declaration was done, it was the discussion on the land use section. Within the MND, all it simply said was the use comes within the uses allowed under 10-615.02 parentheses C, without, which itself then contains a list of uses, and they're never identified. So basically, the 10-5-1602 is basically your recreational uses. And there's essentially several classes, including public recreational facilities, recreational facilities privately operated, and things like that, and resorts. So basically, the zoning ordinance has some very specific definitions. Public recreational facilities are those that are governed. Leaves us essentially with privately, but also allowed within the code is
Carter Meadows, operated by Forest Service, public recreation.
Yeah.
You still have to pay a fee to use the horse camp, but that's what, by our code, that would be public recreation.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Right. And so then there's there's recreational facilities that are privately operated. Privately operated is more acting as an adjective to represent, I read it as to recreational facilities. Within the zoning ordinance's definition, there's several actually types of recreational facilities, including private recreational facility, which I think is the nonprofit one we're talking about. And then there is also a commercial recreational facility, which would be private. However, commercial recreational facility is never mentioned in our zoning ordinance anywhere. A commercial recreational facility, someone I guess could argue, fits Kidder Creek better in that it's simply a private establishment for fee for recreation, period. But we don't have a commercial recreational facility listed anywhere in our zoning ordinance. So either A, Kidder Creek is really a private recreational facility, meaning a nonprofit open for guests, which can, guests is not defined, guests could be paying or not paying. You're certainly paying guests. Or if it really is a commercial recreational facility, and we just say, well, it's a private organization, it's open to the public for a fee, forget all the stuff about nonprofit, then it's probably going to be a private recreational facility anyways under 10-6-1502C, which just says recreational facilities privately operated. And it really gets semantical, and it doesn't translate very well in oral discussion here. But the closest definition appears to be recreational facility private, something operated by a nonprofit, generally for guests. I don't think I can just show up to Kidder Creek and start wandering around and using the facilities like it's a park. So to that extent, depending on how you use the word guests, it really is for people who are invited or allowed on, not just walking on there to use the facilities. Like I guess you could have an equestrian ring, you drop $5 in the box and you go walk right around your horse.
You can be arrested for trespass at KCOC. You will not be arrested for trespass at Carter Meadows.
Right.
Okay.
And I suppose worst comes to worst, I actually had some additional thought on this after the staff report. That under C, maybe I should stop where I'm at, I'm ahead, but recreational facilities privately operated could also be a very encompassing term that also means commercial facilities anyways, which are the for-profit fee type.
The county is in a predicament in that commercial recreation is not clearly defined within county plan.
or more precisely, it's defined in the zoning ordinance, but then you never find the use in the
reference or delineation thereof.
Right. Okay.
That was a question I had.
Okay. So, anyways, to repeat myself, private recreational facility, nonprofit with guests seems to fit KCOC most best. Otherwise, it might probably be considered a commercial recreational facility and probably anyways comes within privately operated recreational facility. I wrote that portion of the staff report, so I feel responsible for it. I think in reflection, I may have written it a little bit overly narrow, but I think definition defended as I've used it or otherwise. C 1016 OC is more broad than what I originally envisioned anyways.
And if I remember correctly, when we had the ski parks expansion, 1602C was what was referenced.
Mm-hmm. Well, and yeah, to also,
but it's private, sure. But you have to pay annual membership, lift ticket, etc. to have access and use of facilities.
Yes.
You essentially are a guest of the park.
Right, and their zoning was PD as well, so.
Be a customer.
You don't
correct.
Have
to have a...
Correct,
you know,
correct.
You could show...
Yeah, I was trying to wrap my head around that with the limitations of our existing county law.
That's another thought. I mean, especially if there's consistent administrative interpretation that way, that has a legal value.
That was my question. Sorry, Haley, but I'm trying to hit some of these as you're going
good.
Through.
Yep, thank you. Next slide. Biological resources. So there was a concern raised that the biological resources assessment did not include the northern spotted owl or bald eagle. Staff is confirming that both species were identified in the wildlife resources report, both within the original assessment and then also the emergency road access portion. Biological report prepared by Jamie Allen, and he, I believe, is on the call this afternoon should you have any specific questions related to his study. Next slide. And so lastly, the mitigation monitoring and reporting program, the MMRP. There was a concern raised that the MMRP was not included for review and approval during the planning, the November Planning Commission meeting. And so our response is that although it was not legally required, staff has incorporated the MMRP into the staff report package for review and approval today. So contained in the staff report package is a suggested motion. And I just want to make note there is a typo in the suggested motion. It should read, I move that we adopt a resolution of the Planning Commission of the County of Siskiyou approving further mitigation measures and a mitigation monitoring and reporting program, not report program, for the Kidder Creek Orchard Camp zone change and use permit.
Do you want reporting?
Reporting, yes, not report program. And that concludes my presentation. The second half of the presentation will be by Brian Cinnone. He will provide the additional fire behavior analysis.
Okay, so to be clear, the information that you're giving us was not presented to the BOS. It's been prepared due to BOS requesting additional information, correct?
So this information is nothing new. It's all been part of the original CAL FIRE preparedness. And then the information, there are a few recommendations to the Kidder Creek that...
Additional. Okay. Yes. I just wanted to be clear whether BOS's decision to send this back to us prompted new information or, as you clarified, new requirements.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
So, for the record, my name is Brian Cinnone. Haley, you could say I was a local fire warden, which, thank you. That would be Chief Laws with CAL FIRE. I am the Director of Emergency Services, the Emergency Manager for Siskiyou County. I was not present in the beginning of this Kidder Creek project, so I've come on in the last since the last board meeting that we had on this, and was asked by the board to review a few of these items that we need to address. So my initial analysis through it, it was compliance, and through this, the KCOC has been partnership with CAL FIRE and along with some of the local fire authorities. So moving into it as the Director of Emergency Services, my job was to kind of address all of the threats and hazards as a whole and then adopt them to our county as seen fit by the board. So the big thing for me was the mitigation part of it. Looking at it, my staff really dug into 4290 and dug in through their fire plans as well. And in accordance with 4290 and 4291 and 3, roads widths were adequate for all responding CAL FIRE Type 3 engines as measured through CAL FIRE. There was one section of the road that has a small outcropping that was a bit of a concern. We will have that marked with reflective road markers, both ingress and egress for that. The additional request was through water tenders in Scott Valley. So Scott Valley is, there is no on-site water tender required for the Kidder Creek area due to the fact that the abundance of Scott Valley's fire protection has 4, Aetna has 1, and then within 30 minutes response time, we have an additional 5 water tenders. In addition to that was the Scott Valley Fuel Project. They have done, in accordance with 4290, the fuel mitigation required for the area through fire breaks, clearing brush, obviously, and then having open areas that we needed to use as a shelter in place, which we'll talk about that shortly. As far as working with their plan and having some adjustments made was the warning alert piece of it. Siskiyou County does have a very robust warning alert system, and through that we've incorporated our public warning alert system, which is also IPAWS. So whenever there's an order, we send out a forced message. It will go to radio, TV, and if you have like a Garmin smartwatch, it will go to that. It will go to cell phone, whether you want it or not, you're getting it. So we don't use that in a warning scenario. We only use that in an order. We saw that very significantly used throughout the McKinney Fire and also throughout part of the Mill Fire. With that, we also use Zone Haven, which is an online platform that anybody can go on and look. One of the things that we did notice, which was a significant concern at the beginning, was Kidder Creek was cut into 2 zones. So we incorporated all of Kidder Creek into one zone, which is SIS 2206 now. And that will be integrated into our real-time warning system as well. What that also has done is that limited the area in and around the Kidder Creek area to better facilitate those who are not incorporated in the camp who are private residents for that.
Before you continue, so from a public safety perspective, you're combining the two with it, one zone instead of 2, so everyone's clear. Operation Office of Emergency Services, when you are issuing warnings for potential evacuation, etc., depending upon the fire behavior, you notify zones in order for orderly evacuation. Is that correct?
Yes and no. So if there's a if there's a new start in zone 2230, we're going to, our standard procedure through my office and sheriff is that if there is an evacuation order, anything surrounding the ordered zone is also a warning zone. So depending if it's north, south, east, or west, it's going to be a warning as well as an order. As the fire progresses, if it starts moving south and 2231 becomes an order, so anything below 2231 is now a warning. So if it's falling in and it's collapsing down on itself or it's coming down on itself, that slide is 1-2 more over, actually. A couple more over the zone. So if we look here, that whole red That is the actual zone that Kidder Creek is in, and one of the, just for the publics, there were no private residents within the zone connection. So it actually just took a piece of, I think it was 2206 and pulled it into 2202. Yes.
Okay, so before you continue,
yes, sir.
Does OES take into consideration, do you have a metric for your decision-making procedure that includes population density?
Yes, absolutely. So each,
can you explain?
Yes, sir. So each zone has that information already plugged in, so it has day and night throughout the demographics of the county. Now, one of the things that we need to do, which we'll get to that as well, is that as their population increases, they're going to be in contact with Siskiyou County OES so we can update those numbers. And at the very least, it will pull in the data from, it's a very robust system, but it pulls in the data through Waze and Google. So anybody who's used Google Maps or Apple Maps, it will pull that information into the program. So it's kind of like Big Brother's watching us all the time on that. With that, is that was one of the recommendations, which I'll talk about shortly, is that having that information pushed to us as a, especially in these summer months that are considered high fire risk, is that we have that information. And this is not uncommon to do. We do this throughout the county. Antelope Fire saw that with the fish camp, the fly fishing camp. We've seen that at Happy Camp. JH Ranch has done the same. They'll send us the information that we're requesting for population on site. We can make better decisions based off of that. So with that recommendation as well, so the project activity level, which Haley has spoke about, we made aware that is something we'd like to see to ensure like proper decision-making points, especially when we're moving into folks are moving to the backcountry, any of the areas that may be concerning or out of reach. Communication is key and a vital point, especially when we're coming up to fire season. So text messaging to myself, to my staff, Emergency Operations Center, once a fire has kicked off, it doesn't matter where it's at, if it's initiated an evacuation, that EOC, our Emergency Operations Center, or EOC is staffed at some level, one being our highest. In previous fires, this has been a top priority for the Emergency Operations Center. Our operations chief is ensured that any increased population throughout the county is notified. One of our biggest is obviously the Lake Siskiyou area come summertime. We saw that in the lava fire as well. So having that ability and being able to make those recommendations quickly and understanding the population density, as you said, having those numbers plugged in, we can build modeling for evacuation based off of that in zone neighborhood. So with that, our recommendations to Kidder Creek. So Siskiyou OES, me as the director, I had three recommendations that we have spoke about. Is A is going to be ready. Establish that or a designated temporary evacuation point within the camp. I think was one of the keys that I really wanted to see. Posting reflective evacuation signage within the camp for both egress and ingress for folks. Once there's a fire, they'll have a proper way to get out. Think about a tsunami, go this way for a tsunami, same idea. Both pedestrian and vehicular is what we're looking at, so color-coded signage to that. Our second part would be that setting of the practice and coordinate with Kidder Creek to evacuate as a whole. So although it's not ideal, an evacuation drill with myself and CAL FIRE and local fire agencies would really set the idea of what needs to happen. Everyone has a plan, but once it's all filled with smoke and it's done for real, it tends to get a little bit more frightening. So having the ability to see what it looks like and without the concerns of actual, the safety concern of a fire. And then speaking with the camp, one of the recommendations that we did make is evacuating early. So based on the models, produced by Cal Fire, which we'll see shortly. Kidder Creek Camp, evacuation times vary from 2 to 4 hours. And a wildfire, especially in that remote area, can come upon quick, as we've seen in these last few years, especially on a 97th percentile day, which we'll briefly touch about. But so we've built some plans on them, and we've helped advise them on multiple plans. Obviously, our alpha plan would be our easiest plan to use because it's coordinated, it's set up, there's a less of a threat, and we have time to evacuate animals as well. That's where it can get tricky. And taking in consideration the population in and around the Kidder Creek area, that also takes into that consideration as well, that we have to evacuate horses, cows, and what other livestock we need to evacuate to get down that road safely. Obviously, we have a Bravo plan and a Charlie plan. It's not ideal. They're a hastier plan that we've reviewed with them and have made corrections on. Both of those are not our ideal plan, and shelter in place is where that Charlie plan comes in, and that is not what we want. So we, ourselves and CAL FIRE, spoke on this. If we're sheltering in place, we have not done a good job with our evacuation protocols and getting people out quickly. And that goes for anyone on that entire road, and that goes for anyone in, within the county, is that if we're sheltering in place, we have not done a good job on pushing and reading what fire behavior is doing. One concern addressed by the board was the 97th percentile days that we do see often here in Siskiyou County. And those are limited suppression difficulties, high winds, low relative humidity, and just overall fire behavior, especially topography. One of the suggestions that we made is that to limit any use of fire on the camp, and limit any use of like backcountry excursions where we might be out of touch. We also put in one of the suggestions was, it's old school, but it works great. It's just a crank siren, like $500, and they'll reach about a mile and a half, if not, depending on the topography. Having that on site for the camp, just in case power does go down, and we have that ability to evacuate. And that would be our biggest thing, is having the 97th percentile days, having the activities closer to central camp, and having pre-staged vehicles in our temporary evacuation point. That's our biggest concern overall for fire, is having those set protocols. If we go back to the fire behavior, so CAL FIRE has done multiple fire behavior analysis. Of course, this is without suppression, but it does move based off of 2 hours to 4 hours in any direction. With those, I think we have one more too. So with those breakdowns of that analysis, we can see that with proper setup, proper practice, and that evacuation should be clearly set forth, and having those procedures set forth. I think one of the ideas that we set forth with the camp is to build a program and an evacuation program with continuity. That if a head camp person is gone, that anybody can grab that binder and be like, step by step, this is what we need to do to get people out safely. So that is where we're at. We make no recommendation for approval or denial, but that's where we are at based off of our analysis asked by the board supervisors. So pending any questions, that is all I have.
How do you like Siskiyou County?
I absolutely love Siskiyou County. I live in the valley. It is a dream to actually live and work in Siskiyou County.
So. You say you live in the valley?
Yes, sir.
So I thought you lived on Yama Street.
No, I have some relatives out here.
Okay.
So yeah, we all have the same last name. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
I'm gonna have questions for you here.
Okay.
Not
right by.
So, did you have anything on the slides that you wanted to show? Because we didn't.
So back to the behavior analysis. That was the one that we wanted to show, and that's if we make that a little bit bigger. But that's there's three different analyses that they have been pushed forward. Did you put all three on?
Yeah.
They're later. They're slides. Just all look the same. So. So yeah, they're in there. That's the protection agency. So a lot of it, all of it is state EPA, which CAL FIRE has run the modeling on. And from ignition to the camp, again, without suppression. We know that that is, ideally, we do have, like you said, water tenders. We have Scott Valley Fire Protection District, as well as the, and we've all seen it, all hands on deck when a fire does break.
I'm going to ask this one now,
okay,
you're up here. Based upon the relative humidity, wind, do you factor in those criteria along with fire behavior as it relates to when, timing issue, you issue warnings for certain zones, i.e. if we're in the 97, will that automatically trigger alert warning potentially to evacuate 5 zones out from the fire? Whereas if we are high moisture, no winds, you would only issue the warning 1 zone over.
Yeah, so, and a lot of that depends, but we also run modeling that we can see immediately what the
fire is.
In
real time. In real time.
Have the
model,
we have
the
modeling
time.
Throughout zone having, we have modeling throughout. So once there's an ignition start, I am, throughout the night, I get phone calls, but if we have an ignition start, CAL FIRE gives me a call immediately, myself and Sheriff, and we start triggering evacuations. Based off of that, it can be, Sheriff and I are both of the same agreements that we would rather somebody be upset away from their home for a night than having them lose their lives. We will issue warnings and we will issue orders. We will do it preemptively just in case. And it is something that for us is very important, and we want to make sure that people really understand that when there's an evacuation warning. You don't have to leave in an order. I mean, you don't have to leave in a warning, but you should leave in a warning, especially if you have animals, elderly, a group of children. Those are reasons to leave early. In an order, you should leave. You don't have to leave, but then it becomes a life-saving issue, and we don't want that, right? We want to be able to get people out quickly. We want to make sure that folks are safe. So heeding those warnings and orders are very important, and we have no problems evacuating early. And we do it quickly, and we'll punch. It is not uncommon to punch 10 to 15 zones in one. You know that.
I actually work at the EOC with them putting in those orders.
When I'm screaming on the telephone that what we need to do, it's not uncommon to punch 20 zones.
Yeah.
So in your position at OES, would you recommend that KCOC begin evacuation if the zone is put under warning?
That would be my recommendation. If it's close, it's touching red. And our zones are very large in Siskiyou County, but that doesn't, we saw this in the Klamathon, or we saw this in McKinney, we saw this in the Lava Fire.
The mountain fire, definitely.
We saw runs that are 20 miles and that can happen quickly. So if they're in a red and it's touching yellow, that alpha plan should be initiated and start getting that nice, easy evacuation out, because evacuating easily and under your own terms is much easier than evacuating under duress.
Are you a federal employee or county?
Well, I guess that's both, sir. So I am a county employee and I'm also an emergency manager in the Air Force Reserve as well.
Oh, okay.
So I'm both.
Two hats.
That was all the question I have for you right now.
Right.
Thank you.
All right, sounds good. Any other questions?
Okay, continuing with staff report.
Staff report presentation has been concluded.
The staff rests, leaning against the wall. All right. Back to here. Any questions other than
point.
The ones I've asked of staff, Brian, Haley?
Not this time, sir.
Not this time. All right. So make sure we follow proper procedure, prior and proper preparation, prevents piss poor performance. Here we go. I will ask the clerk, so we have it on the record, has all submitted correspondence been delivered to our hands?
As of the time...
The meeting started?
Yes.
Thank you. All submitted, and I'm making this publicly acknowledged. One second. All public submitted comments are part of the record. Okay, whether it was email, snail mail, or hand delivery today, it will be part of the record.
Really?
Additional comment letters? Okay. Do we have any other county departments or state departments that want to publicly talk to us? I don't see CAL FIRE here today. I don't see Department of Public Health. I don't see Public Works. Okay, making sure we didn't have anything there. So then we will go ahead and open the public hearing. And G is proponents, and I have, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Glenn and Chris, you are here for reference. You're not necessarily here to have any opening statements. Okay, I'm setting you in the library of reference. Mr. Lloyd, are you for reference also, or are you wishing to speak as part of the project?
I'd like to make a comment.
You are the first card I have for that then.
And then Chris Cummings, and the county staff had mentioned my name for presenting on the pond evaporation.
So we will call you up for that. Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Lloyd.
My name is Tim Lloyd, and I am asking the board for a review and clarity on mitigation measures 4.5 and 4.7. As worded, we feel the measures are unclear. And
to be clear, are you talking about the MMRP or?
The mitigation measures in the staff report.
In the MMRP.
Correct.
Okay, just to be clear. Okay, continue.
That these measures could lead to confusion and some disagreement about the scope of measures. And I would be glad to comment more if you have questions about that.
Good. I made the note here, and we will take a look at that. That's one that I had highlighted myself on 4.5. Yep, 4.7 is also highlighted. Okay. So that were your comments? All right. That one I'm setting aside here for a moment. All right. I don't believe there were any other supports. I'm just double checking here. Okay. So just simply in order that we have here, with 3 minutes, we have Sharna Gilmore. Gene, that was from the vacation STRs. It shouldn't be in this podcast.
My name is Sharna Gilmore, and I live at 850 Highland Street in Adams.
Every 100%.
I sent in something last night that I think I've received, so I'm just going to kind of truncate that just to have it set it open. I'm respectfully submitting a letter of protest based on the material that was provided to you to make a decision on the expansion, really solely based on my concerns about around water. And then the subsequent staff report and concerns from the board of supervisors. I want to just clarify some of the things that I personally, and I'm not a hydrologist or an engineer. I want to make sure that that's disclosed around here as a city or as a community member. So in Revelation that the pond is not actually a pass-through, that does significantly change, in my opinion, kind of the fundamental concept of the pond. And I think it does need to be clarified and further explored via legal counsel. I heard earlier that there was some reference that it was legally, potentially legally, and I would recommend that we have some legal reference. Perhaps that's this gentleman here. As to the evaporation study that was specifically brought up in the staff report, I would just like to bring forth some additional data that I've collected that would differ from Mr. Cummings' report, which states that the annual rainfall that he used was 43.5 inches annually. And I assure you, if that was the case, I wouldn't be here. That's a lot of rain. And if you look at the empirical data from the Fort Jones Ranger Station, which is started back in 1936 through 2016, that annual precipitation is actually 20.4. If you were to truncate that even further to the water year 2015 to 2020, that actually reduces to 17.4. So these aren't insignificant differences. They actually make a substantial difference in the findings of an evaporation report, which Mr. Cummings estimated would have a net gain of 1 inch per year based on the rainfall calculations. And I argue, based on the data from 1936 to 2016, it actually has a net gain or decrease of 21.8. I'd further like to just address that the water rights also that Mr. Cummings used was a full CFS. And if you were to look at the Scott River Decree that was established back in 1980, the water right possessed by the camp actually has a decreasing flow amount based on the flow head. So at 16 and over, they can take one CFS, but as that ratchets down through the summer months, the right for water actually ratchets down, which then exacerbates that loss of potential loss.
Everything that you included in the letter that we received, basically, correct?
Yes, I was
good. Okay, I was following along with you. Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to expand on the concerns about the groundwater use. Okay.
Thank you. We have Brenda, and it starts with a P, H, and then it looks like my signature.
Okay, I'm Brenda Phillips, and I live at 5135 South Kidderloo. I just want to say, before you make your decision on the Kidder Creek Orchard Camp zone change, I'd like to suggest that you watch two films available to you on YouTube, one called Fire in Paradise, and another short film, The Dixie Fire, which is about a fire in a place called Greenville, a name not dissimilar to Greenview. Having watched the movies, I'd like you to drive to Scott Valley and make a stop in Fort Jones. Fort Jones had a population of 695 in the 2020 census. So in this town, drive around the streets and ponder how much water these dwellings use. Look at the sewage works and think about the sewage and the grey water produced by the city's citizens. Purchase the fire station, paid by local taxpayers, and in particular, see how four roads converge from different directions that could provide a means of escaping the disaster. The land's flat and a few trees, making the community a safer place to live. Continue, drive along Highway 3, and think how far those fire trucks have to travel to South Kidder Creek Road. Gaze at Scott Valley and think how an ambulance serves all this area. As you drive along the road to the camp, look at the width of the road, particularly at the hairpin bends as to the entry to a box canyon where Kidder Creek Orchard Camp is situated. There's a beautiful stretch of road with a canopy of trees, wooded slopes, babbling creek, but imagine the entire population of Fort Jones, plus 150 more souls with horses, RVs, campers, dashing for their lives, evading oncoming emergency vehicles. Next, drive on to Etna, population 673 in the 2020 census. think about the water usage of this community and the disposal of wastewater. Notice the multiple ways in and out of the city. Mosey over to the high school and look at the football field and imagine a 6-foot-deep pond 5.5 times larger than this football field. Is having such a body of water an extravagance in a time of drought? And will this camp luxury make its downstream neighbours have empty wells? I ask you to look at Etna and Fort Jones to put this camp's environmental impact in its context. This is with 844 people. These communities are smaller than the planned camp. I suggest that the planning committee vote for alternative project number one and no project alternative, as the development of the camp would be reprehensible in my mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Greta Walker.
Hello, and thank you for your work and your work for the staff. My name is Freda Walker, and I live at 5415 South Kidder Creek Loop. And I just wanted to respond to a few things. I support the mission for the camp, but not the expansion to 844 or 622. And some of the things got answered today for me a little bit. And one of them had to do with zoning. And I just wondered, you know, about the real definitions in our code, our regulations in the county, that identify, you know, commercial recreation. And I wondered how the public is actually defined in our codes. And, you know, what codes do I look at to know that definition? And I wondered, you know, are businesses defined in our codes in the county? And, you know, how's that determined? And I don't know the answer to that. And I wondered how the Kidder Creek can only be open if it's a private one, you know, a private recreational one as it was described, is, you know, how do those bona fide members get identified? You know, who are they? Is there a list? And does that list change, or how do they become bona fide members? I don't know the answer to that. Maybe it's not clear in our code. Under the environmental review, the mitigated measures, and these are something that passed from the very beginning of the of the application. I just, you know, it indicates that noise is significant, but it's unavoidable, right? And one of the things I think about is that the way to lower the impact is to lower the number of people that are going to camp. You know, do we have data that indicates what that impact might be at 400 or at 450 or at 500 versus 844 or 622? I also have concerns about the Scott Valley Area Plan that, you know, I feel like there's a violation to have a city, the size of a city, at Fort John or Edna, up Kidder Creek Road. And does that open the door to other people or other businesses, organizations to really, you know, expand what they're doing and the use of water, et cetera? So anyway, I would like to recommend that you don't approve it as it is, but that there be a little bit more research about the impacts to those of us who live on the road with a lower occupancy number. Thank you.